Gone now, yep. Okay, as one already can see on the slide, this is I'm going to report on a joint work with Magdalena Musette about, well, I used to put a subtitle there. What is going on? Too much wind up here. Okay, so, I mean, the short title is really, when, if you have two phenomena, or say, hyperfinite phenomena, when are they pre-dual isomorphic? What can we say about that? And when are pre-dual CP isomorphics? And, well, since I'm the first speaker, and although it's an operator space conference, I'll just give the starting definition from operator space theory. So, if you have a Hilbert space and a closed, so operator space is basically a closed subspace of V of H, or H is a Hilbert space, with a matrix norm structure you get from considering the, maybe I should do stick, by considering the n by n matrix over E embedded in the n matrix, n by n matrix is over B of H, which is with a norm, with a C star norm, that means is the norm coming from B of the sum of H copies, n copies of H. Okay, and actually there's an abstract characterization due to Wang that if you have a Banach space together with a set of norms on the n by n matrix over E, a norm of that for all n, then satisfying two simple actions, then you can actually realize it as a concrete subspace of B of H in this way, such that the norm fits. Okay, and if you have operator spaces, you can also talk about completely bounded maps, namely, if you have a map from E to F, you can extend it to a map on the n by n matrix over E to the n by n matrix over F, simply by taking phi of each matrix or each element of the matrix. And it's called completely bounded if the supreme of the norms of this map you get is finite. And CB E comma F denotes the Banach space of all completely bounded maps from E to F. I will only talk about C-star algebras and dual of C-star algebras as operator spaces. Of course, if you have a C-star algebra, then you can it can be embedded in B of H in a natural way. So it's obviously a operator space if you have the dual of a C-star algebra. You have to be a bit more careful because if you just take the dual of M and of taking the norm you get from the dual of M and A, it will not satisfy Wang's axioms. But if you do it this way, that you identify the n by n matrix over A star as a, consider this as a bounded map or linear map from bounded linear map from A to M and C, and put on this set the completely bounded norm, then you get a sequence of norms on M and of A star which satisfy Wang's axioms, and you have a operator space. And if you want to do it for pre-duals, you just consider pre-duals of an algebra, you just consider the pre-dual as a subspace of the dual of N. Also, a remark which is not completely trivial because the norm of this is not the dual of the norm of M and M, but nevertheless you will get that a linear map from the pre-dual of an algebra to the pre-dual of another phenomenon will be completely bounded if and only if the adjoint from n to n is completely bounded and the completely bounded norms are the same. Now, what's I forgot I have two of these. Sorry. Okay, so the main question was when are the predecessors of two phenomena, but hyperfinite phenomena, but CB isomorphic. And of course, why not ask a question of, about the phenomena, but themselves? Well, that's because that has already been answered. Namely, if you have two infinite dimensional injective or hyperfinite factors, that's the same, on a separable hyperspace or with the same as with separable predecessors, then the phenomena by itself are isomorphic as operator spaces, even. This is the definition of being isomorphic as operator spaces, but you get that all infinite dimensional injective factors fall in the same category. They have all the same CB structure. Okay, the similar result was proved shortly after by Hirschberg, namely for C-style bars. If you have two simple nuclear separable C-style bars which are non-type 1, then actually they are CB isomorphic. So again, isomorphic as operator spaces. So why should one believe there's any interesting thing going on when we look at the predecessors? Well, the first result in this direction is in a joint paper I have with Haskell Rosenthal and Fyodor Sukhachev, which says that if you have a 2-1 factor and a 2-infinity factor, here there's nothing about injectivity or hyperfineness, then the predual cannot even be isomorphic as Banach spaces. Actually, we prove that that the second class S1 cannot be Banach space embedded in the predual of any finite phenomenon algebra. So actually you get this for, if n is just properly infinite phenomenon algebra, then the predual contains a copy of the second class. Okay, that's stopped. So in particular there's no, they are not isomorphic as Banach spaces. Another result which comes out of two papers, one by PC and one by Junge, Marius Junge, is that if you have also here there's no, well, any semifinite phenomenon algebra doesn't need to be injective, and well, there's only, I'll come back to classification of factors, but there's only one injective factor of type 3-1 with several predual called R infinity, and then turns out that R infinity, well, that R infinity, the predual of R infinity does not CB embed in the predual of any semifinite phenomenon, but so in particular the predual of a semifinite phenomenon cannot be isomorphic to the predual of R infinity. And the proof is based on PC's operator Hilbert space, which is obtained by interpolation between row and column Hilbert spaces. But the actual norm you get out of it, you can write in this way that the norm, if you have a standard basis of L2n, and then you take a linear combination with matrix coefficients, then the norm of that in Mn of 08 is equal to the norm of xi tensor xi bar, which is just the same matrix with complex conjugate matrix entries, and then the square root of that norm in the Mn square matrices. And then PC proved that 08 does not embed in CB embed in the predual of any semifinal phenomenon, why Junge has proved that 08 actually CB embed in the predual of R infinity. Thank you. Okay, so before I state our main results, I'll go back to the classification of injective factors, or, well, we work in a several Google space, so injective is the same as hyperfinite, meaning that you can find an increasing sequence of sub-finite dimensional and sub-finite algebras that's such that the union of that is strongly dense. Okay, and if you take I'll just do the whole thing. And so there's type 1, type 2, and type 3, three phenomenal algebras with subdivision, and I only stick to factors. Okay, so that means the center is trivial. So type 1, there's only the n by n matrices, one for each natural number n, or one infinity, which is B of the bounded operators on an infinite dimensional separable Hilbert space. In the 2-1 case, there's only one that goes back to Morin von Neumann. You can realize it as an infinite tensor product 2 by 2 matrices with respect to the trace, normalized trace. And many years later, Alan Kahn proved that there's only one to infinity, namely the one you obviously get by taking the hyperfinite 2-1 and tensor with the bounded operators on an infinite dimensional Hilbert space. Then there's a type 3, which was somewhat a black box until Kahn started to work on them, and using two-meter Taki-Taki theory was able to divide them in classes 3 lambda, where lambda is any number in the interval from 0 to 1, both numbers included. Somehow the type 3 0 case is the most difficult one to describe, namely because you have, first of all, you have uncountably many non-isomorphic 3-0, injective 3-0 factors. You can all write them as a cross product of an abelian phenomenon algebra with an action of the integers. The classification can be done by what's called a non-transitive ergodic flow, or the flow of weight of the phenomenon algebra. I'll come back to that. For the rest of them, it's simpler. 3 lambdas, lambda between 0 and 1, especially between 0 and 1, can be realized as, again, as infinite tensor product 2 by 2 matrix, where you have a non-tracial state here on the 2 by 2 matrix, where the ratio between the two eigenvalues of this matrix here is lambda. And in the 3-1 case, there's only one, and you can write it. Well, it looks like they're different, but actually one can prove that they're all the same. And they're all isomorphic to can be written as the tensor product of two powers factors if you put in this extra condition that log lambda 1 divided by log lambda 2 is irrational. If this is a rational number, you get a new powers factor. Okay, let me state the main theorems. I tried to change it to main results, but gave up in the in the paper it appears as three different theorems. Let's say take two hyperfinite factors with separate pre-dual. If one is semi-finite and the other is type 3, then they are not CP isomorphic. As we get a little more, we cannot prove that how is it that n star do not pre-dual n do not CP embed in pre-dual of m, but we can prove that it doesn't embed as a CP complement in subspace. Now, then we can determine exactly which type 3 factors have pre-duals that are CP isomorphic to the pre-dual of this device. Namely, that if you have a hyperfinite type 3 factor, then n pre-dual n is CP isomorphic to the pre-dual of the unique hyperfinite tree one if and only if there is a invariant state, normal invariant state on the flow of weight frame. I'll come back to the definition of that. And finally, we can prove that actually for the type 3-0, actually this will, the flow on 3 lambda factors is very simple. It's just rotations on the circle, so which obviously have an invariant state. So this will in particular prove that all of these have the same, have CP isomorphic figures. It was actually already in the paper with Rosenthal and Superchip with a different proof. But for the 3-0 case, there's a much richer structure. Not only that, uncount many different 3-0 factors, you can actually, among them, find uncount many 3-0 factors for which the figures are not CP isomorphic. Okay, the method of proof is, first is an old and now very standard thing, which already Christian and Sinclair used in their approach, namely this Potinsky lemma or Potinsky trick, as I used to like to call it. You have, if you have two Banach spaces and you know that each of them is a complemented subspace of the other, you can write it this way, and each are isomorphic to its double, then they're actually isomorphic in its Banach spaces. And, you can basically write down, well, not a two-line proof, but a five-line proof, first proving that X, you play with these, just want to see that X absorbs F, and then you can use that finally to get that X is is isomorphic to Y. And all these isomorphisms you can carry over to the category of operator spaces and CP isomorphism. So the exactly same result holds there. Excuse me? Is it true in any what? Yeah, I guess so. It's a result in semigroups. Okay, let me, so the next one, okay, let me just show the whole thing. So next we prove the following, that if two, the predicates of two properly infinite phenomena are CP isomorphic, that's equivalent to that the identity of the predual and factors to n star and predual and vice versa when n of n permuted. That's actually correspond exactly to statements like 1 and 2 up there. And the other two statements, 3 and 4, follows immediately from being properly infinite. So you can, by proving two isometries with range projections sum up to 1, it's easy to, elemental to prove that the predual of a phenomenon with a CP isomorphism, sorry, a properly infinite phenomenon with CP isomorphism is double, and the same holds for the predual. So this is follows immediately from lemma A, actually. And this one is just translating 2 to the dual maps. If you have a CP map from M star to N star, then you get look at the dual map, then it'll now be a normal CP map. And if you have a normal CP map for N to N, it's a dual of a, or it's adjoint of a CP map from M star to N star. So from that you easily get 3 is equivalent to 2. So the hard part is the last one here, that if you have such a fact, of course 4 implies 3. 4 says that you want your map from M to N to be a normal phenomenon by embedding, and you want your J from N to M to be a conditional expectation. You can make it faithful if you like, but I took that out because it's not necessary for proof. So the hard part is to prove that 3 implies 4. And let me see, I think I've spent, since the an operator space conference, I think I'll spend a little time on the proof of 3 implies 4. So, it's based on some Steinberg type results. Oops, I wanted to. First of all, the Steinspring theorem, Stanler talked about maps into B of H, and then you can make a representation into B of H, and then have an asymmetry, such as alpha X is given like V star pi of X V. Actually, there is a paper of Kasparov, well, he does it in a C star setting, that you can, if you have a map into some, I translate it into phenomena, but if you have some phenomena, but here you can do the same, but except that you have to go to the infinite, by infinite matrices over N. In the C-star case, you had to go into the multiply algebra of A tensor, the compact operator. But if it's properly infinite, one can avoid this, and or it doesn't give any difference. So actually, you can find a representation of N into N, so the alpha becomes this form with a V inside N. The proof is not very complicated. You have to start with the normal, the standard Steinberg decomposition, and then work from there. Okay, the second one, I have the same assumptions that N is properly infinite, they have several pre-dual, and then I need that the range or the phenomenon of N is injective in this case. Then you can make this such a Poisson dilation thing again with for a representation going into N, and these operators R and S will be in N. And it's essential here that when your map alpha or beta here is normal, then the representation here can be chosen to be normal. So, although injectivity is not used in the first part, it's actually crucial down here. You can, if this map beta is not, you can find such map betas which is not in the linear span of the completely positive maps, and then it can obviously not be written this way. So let me go back to the proof of, I need both slides on, I don't know what to do. Let me go back to the proof of 3 implies 4. Maybe I can do like... No, it doesn't fit. They're both at the bottom. Okay. So let me briefly indicate the proof of 3 implies 4. Then you start with... You have a factorization of N. I just put one way that if I have IDM factors through N, CP factors through N with normal maps, then you can construct an embedding of M and N and a normal conditional expectation from N down on M. So you start with just such a factorization with CP maps, and then the first step is to change this one into an embedding, and by this Steinspan-Poisson type result, you can get that your map alpha 1 is of the form alpha 1 of A. Now I call them P PMQ because I need RNS later on, and then some representation pi hat of A. Forget about this one. And so, in particular, you get that A, which is beta 1 compared to alpha 1 of A, have this form, beta 1 of P pi hat of A, Q, for all A and N. So this implies that pi hat has to be 1 to 1. It's unitary normal, so therefore pi hat of M is a subphenomenal of N isomorphic to M. So why not identify M with this range, and then I can forget about writing pi hat. I just get A is equal to beta 1 P A Q, and then I can define a map beta 2 of B to be this one defined for all B and N. And it's now elemental to check that this is actually this beta 2 is a normal CB projection of N onto the subalgebra M. So that was the first part. I rearranged things such that my alpha 1 became an inclusion map. And the second step is to change beta 2 into a conditional expectation. And then I use again this lemma C just with N of M, permuted. So I get now a star, normal star representation, normal unitary star representation of N into M, and two operators, R and N, R and S in M, such that beta 2 of B is of this form. Okay, to get a condition expectation out of that, I actually forget about R, some more or less, but I work with the operator S. And the first step is to find, exchange it with something in the convex hull of pi of u s u star, where u runs in the unitaries of m, such that it becomes a fixed point under this action, where pi of u from the left, u star from the right, where u is a unitary in m, and recall that m sits inside n. This can be done by, well, one way of saying is, well, it should be a swat with t, I think. Injective is equivalent to hyperfinite, which is equivalent to Schwarz property P by Kahn's work from 76. And a 2x2 matrix trick will show this. You can also simply use the fact that if you write M as the strong closure of an decreasing sequence of finite dimensional C star suburb, and you can average over unitary these groups and go to the limit. So this is not hard. Once you have this one, you can observe that if you, instead of S write pi u s u star, well, up here you have plugging 1 in, you have R times S is equal to 1. Actually, also this will always be 1 because this was beta 2 of u times u star. And beta 2 was the identity of M, so this is u u star, which is the identity. So if you go to the closed convex hull of all of this, you will get R S0 is equal to 1. And we need that only for one thing, namely to see that S0 is bounded away from 0. Meaning that the absolute value of S0 is an invertible operator. S0 itself does not need to be invertible. So if you form the polar decomposition, you can actually write the U0 in this way, and this becomes an isometry, probably not an not necessarily unitary. And then you play with this algebraic relation you have here. See that S0 into this implies you can put U star over here, and so S0 intertwines the trivial action of A with pi of A, so S0 star will do it the other way just by going to adjoints, and therefore you get that A actually commutes with S0 star S0, so the actual value of S0 is in the center of M. Everything goes on inside M here. And then you play with this again. So if you now take u zero star pi a u star, then you can you can write it this way, and then using the fact that this is in the center, you can put it in the other side here. So you get that this is actually equal to u zero star u zero a or a. And so if you define beta to be this map on not only on M but on all of N, the pi maps N into M, then you this will be completely positive unit cell, and it's the identity on M, so therefore it's a condition expectation. End of proof. Okay, so let's look at the case, this first statement, namely if you have two hyperfinite factors, M is semifinite, N is type 3, prove that the pre-duals are not CB isomorphic. Well, assume that they were, then by this bi-implication 1 equivalent to 4, it will mean that you can find an embedding of N in M and a normal condition expectation E of M onto N. But this actually goes against both results of, by Sakai and Tomiyama. I think the thing we actually need with type 2 or type 3 is already in Sakai, in the work of Sakai from 1959. He used a trick to prove that the tensor product of a semifinite with a type 3 became type 3. And later on, Tomiyama generalized it to say that condition expectations are type reducing in the sense that if you have a factor or a phenomenon about type, something here and another phenomenon type this one, then you can, then if you have a condition expectation from M to N, then the type of N has to be less or equal to the type of M. If you think of them as numbers 1, 2, and 3, not with any subdivisions. So in particular, you cannot have a conditional expectation, normal conditional expectation from a semifinite alpha onto a type 3 phenomenon alpha. Okay, I didn't say that here that n should be, this proof actually works only if n is properly infinite, but if it's not, you can just tensor m and m with will be of 8, and then the proof works. Okay, so what is the flow of weight of a type 3 factor? Well, you take a type 3 factor, you have to take a, any normal phaseful state on M, which exists since I assume that pre-dual M is separable. You form this cross product with M with the real line, where it's a modular automorphism group, and you consider the center of this algebra. And you can, when you make cross product, there's a natural dual action on the cross product, namely, it can be realized at the generators. I'll consider M as a subalgebra of N, and then it's generated by M and one parameter family of unitaries, lambda T, and then T to S should leave anything in M fixed, and it should multiply these unitaries with E to the IST. If you take the reflection of this one parameter family of automorphism to the center, then you get then you get an ergodic action on ZN, meaning that the only invariant elements instead of N are the scalar multiples of the identity. Of course, if you have any abelian phenomenon like what we said about with hyperspace, you can think of as an infinity of a standard measure space. And so this flow can be realized as given by one parameter family of measure, Borel transformation on this underlying space, omega, which preserves not necessarily the measure mu itself, but at least it preserves the measure class of mu. That means it sends each of these sends mu into a measure which has the same null sets. Okay, and then it's known from results of Kahn and Takasagi that M is type 3-0 if and only if this ergodic action is non-transitive. That means if you realize it in this way, given by Borel transformation, the measure mu is not concentrated in a single orbit. So there's no orbit such that the complement has measure 0. In the other cases, you actually have transitive flows, namely 3 lambda. The flow is simply, you can think of R divided by this as a circle of what is called length of the circle is B minus large lambda, and CJ is simply rotation by this. And if M is type 3-1, then the center is trivial, and so it's just a scalar multiplicity, gentian, CJS therefore becomes a trivial action. There's actually one flow missing from this list, namely a third transitive flow, namely simply the action translation on R, that doesn't come up here because that really corresponds to the semifinite case. Okay, but staying in this picture, then Kahn and Krieger proved that if you stick to injective factors, then this map from M to each flow is a one-to-one map of isomorphism classes of phenomenon algebras to the isomorphism classes of these non-transitive ergodic flows on standard measure spaces. Okay, proof of two in the main theorem, namely characterization of these pre-duals that are CP isomorphic to the pre-dual of infinity. How much? I have 8 minutes left or something like that. Yeah, okay. Maybe I'll skip this one then and go on to the last one. Yeah, okay. Let's see. I can go back to it if you want. Okay, so forget about the top. And now I go to, I think I need some of the others, sorry. So I'll just go quickly to this. So, about the proof of two. So you have a hyperfine type 3 factor. You want to prove that if its pre-dual is isomorphic, CP isomorphic to the pre-dual of the hyperfine 3-1, then there is a normal invariant state on the flow of weight. Okay, maybe I'll just give you the proof of the easy way. And that goes via cross product. So you assume that you have and infinity is sitting inside M with a normal condition expectation of M until M0. Then you start with some state on M0. You can lift it up to a normal state on faithful state here I've written faithful, but that's because in the type 3 case, each to 2 years, you can do it without faithful, you can also do it with a faithful one. I'll skip that. And then you lift this up till you get a normal faithful state, and then by results back to Takasagi, 74 or some things like that, you'll know that this modern automorphism extend this one, so you get a natural embedding of this cross product into this cross product. And actually it's also easy to see that you can extend this condition application to condition application from the cross product here to the cross product here. And this condition expectation will intertwine the dual actions on N0 and N respectively in this way. So if you and also it's not hard to see that it maps the center of N into the center of N0. But N0 was on infinity, and in the 3-1 case you have that the center of the cross product is just C. So this one is just the scalar multiples of the identity. So actually E tilde of X must have the form phi of X. One, I guess there's too many phis here. This phi is not necessarily the same as this one. And by using this formula, it's quite obvious that this would become a theta S invariant normal state on set of N. I managed to mess up my slide so much that I had to skip this book. Second. No, here it comes. Okay, so maybe I'll just briefly go the other way and say, I mean, the main trick is to give a different characterization of having a normal state on the flow of weights, and I'm not going into detail of this, but it turned out that using a result I had together with Erling Stelmer back in 1990, one can prove that there exists a normal invariant state on the flow of weight if and only if, for every normal state of M, phi is almost unitary equivalent to this state on the N by N matrices over M. And to make sense out of that, you have to if you have two states on normal states and M itself, then they're approximate unitary equivalent if this hold. But using the fact that type 3 factors are probably infinite, M is in a natural way isomorphic to the K by K matrix over M. And you can therefore somehow identify the state space of M with that of NK of M and or MN of M for all N, so this actually makes sense. And this is somehow the key step in the proof. Once you have this one, I forgot to say it, then you can use the existence of such a state to construct an embedding on infinity into M with a normal condition excitation of M onto an infinity. And going the other way is much easier, because then it's so that R infinity absorbs any other hyperfinite factor. That means M tends to R infinity is isomorphic to R infinity. So this will obviously give an embedding of M into R infinity here, which is this one, with a normal, and you just taking any state and look at on this one, look at the, what would be right slice map corresponding to that, that will give you a conditional expectation of the tensor product onto the first factor M. And so actually we have gone both ways, infinity bed into M with a normal conditional expectation down on infinity, and also the other way around. So by again by one equivalent to four, you get that they have CB isomorphic preduals. Okay, and yeah, well, I think I I lost track of the truth, but if you study carefully, you see that you get Ethan. This is an Ethanonious condition.
Can I go on for 5 more minutes?
Okay. This is about finding, encountering many non-isomorphic pre-duals of type 3 serial factors. You start with two type 3 factors and you consider the two flows. And then if you assume that the pre-duals are isomorphic, then you can construct intertwining operators R and S for the flows of theta 1 on the center here and the flow of theta 2 on the center here. And the proof I essentially gave before it was basically this argument that I had on the previous slide, that once you have, first of all, say you can embed this into this one, if you have CP isomorphic here, you know that M1 can be embedded in M2 with a normal condition expectation of M2 onto M1, then you extend this normal condition expectation to the cross product, as I showed before, and then taking the restriction of the condition expectation, I guess, from N2 to N1, you'll get this map S, which is an intertwiner. And going the other way, factoring M2, realizing M2 is a subalgebra of M1 as a range of a normal condition expectation, you'll get the other one here. And the next thing is a lemma which somehow shows that there exist flows which are far from having invariant states, and this number T somehow tells you how far it is. So you can construct non-transitive ergodic flows such that for any normal state on this abelian phonon algebra, you will have the limit of omega theta to the element 2 to the n minus omega, will actually convert to t, no matter what state you start with. This is a difficult construction, which I won't have time to go into, but say, if you have done this, but again, you construct into the flows and doesn't think about the phenomenon, but then you use at the end the fact by the theorem of Conlon-Krieger that any such flow corresponds to is the flow of a type 3 serial factor, and then you are done. But just to say, to give a proof of lemma of a theorem assuming lemma D and lemma E. So assume that you have I take this one parameter family of flow from lemma E and consider the corresponding hyperfinite three serial factors which are known to exist by Conlon-Krieger's result. And then I want to prove that the pre-duals are not CP isomorphic when T1 is different from T2. So assume they were CP isomorphic. Then I know that there exist theta intertwiners from AT1 to AT2 and from AT2 to AT1, like over here. And they are in particular unitary normal positive maps, so in fact completely positive, if you like, so they are they have norm less than or equal to 1. So if you look at the definition of this up here, then I know that T2 you can get as a limit of T2 and T2 of any state here, subtracting the same state here, and so I take one state on normal state on the flow of what will be the flow on AT1, and then I compose it with S like this, and I'll get a state on at2, and then I know that this limit is t2. And then I use the intertwining property to move this s outside, and then I have to change the t to 2 to t to 1. No, t2 to t1, sorry. And then I look up here again and see now we have, we're looking at a flow t1, so I know that this converts to, wait a minute, what I'm saying. So far nothing has happened. Then I use that s is contractive, so I can get a less or equal to this limit. And up from here, I know that this limit is t1. So t1 is less than t2. T2 is less than t1. And then if I use the same argument on the intertwiner r instead of intertwiner s, I'll get the opposite inequality t1, less or equal to t2, and then I'm done. Okay, the rest of the constructing this flow will be on the slides, which will be come on the website, I think. And anyway, everything is posted on the archive. Okay, of course, yeah, you have this big class of three, of type three factors, which all have the same pre-dual, so it makes sense to ask what is the Banach mass or CB distance between these pre-duals. I don't know, I would believe that if maybe just a bit smaller than one or something like that, they will have to be isomorphic as phenomenal, but I haven't really considered the problem. Well, I mean, maybe the title of the paper in the talk is maybe saying too much. It looks like we say having a complete classification. We don't have that. I mean, so I believe that we have so far not been able to prove it, that this existence of these intertwiners is an if and only if condition for the pre-duals are CB isomorphic, but the proof is up in the air. I have no idea how to do it. What do you think?
Maybe the proof is up the air. Any more questions? That's not the case, but let's take a look again for this one.